That's what Elvis would say if he was alive.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
He's alive.
Elvis is alive. He's with Salman Rushdie.
I thought he lived in Boston.
They're all hiding out somewhere. So whose recorder is this one?
It's Bob Shaw.
Okay. I'll sneak it closer so we can possibly get a better recording.
All right.
Living on the edge. Drivers, you ready? Okay. So, why do we meditate?
So your mind becomes peaceful and calm.
So your mind becomes peaceful and calm? Calm, I think I heard here. Any other reasons why we meditate?
Sanity.
Relax? Sanity?
Unwinding.
Say again?
Unwinding.
Unwinding, right. What else? Why else do we meditate?
Wisdom.
Why else?
Manage pain.
Yes.
Give our mind a break.
That's great. What else?
Just to be still.
Yeah. Why else?
My brain hurts.
It's empty. Not yet, it's not. Why else?
Enlightened.
To be enlightened. That's a good one too, yes. Sorry?
I just said dream on.
Dream on. Some people will meditate just to dream on. Yes. Why else? It's interesting, the collective wisdom in a room, isn't it? Mm. Yeah.
It's a good way to clear the rubbish out so you can start thinking about something important you've got to organise.
It's a good way of clearing all out the rubbish that you've got so you can get other things organised. That sounds painful.
You've got something you're really sort of trying to, you're really trying to do something difficult. For instance, like a 13-inch tire or a 14-inch wheel, and you can't, and you struggle with it for days and you're getting angry with it, meditate, calm down. All will be revealed.
All will be revealed.
Oh, maybe that have the wisdom to go on and buy a 14-inch tire.
Right. Yes, that's right.
All
yes.
Different ways of coming up with ideas.
When wisdom is sharp, it doesn't struggle with the 13-inch tire trying to go on a 14-inch wheel.
Stubbornness drives us on, if not careful.
It does. Sorry, are you married or?
I've always been round shoulders.
I didn't know if you were calling your wife stubbornness, just for the sake of the recording. That's okay. Many wives will have stubborn husbands whose names will not be mentioned as well. So stubbornness is a good quality. It has its place. It does have its place. I'm quite stubborn when I get to the airport. I fly a fair bit. So when I get to the airport, I'm quite stubborn too. I demand that I use the toilet that's got the picture of a man on it rather than the woman, although I wear a dress.
Why did I tell you to go into the women's toilet?
Well, because the symbol has a dress, right? So technically, if I looked at what I'm wearing, I should really accord with a sign. But I'm a little bit, you know, avant-garde and a bit stubborn, and I insist on going into the men's toilet. Yes. Oh, because there's less screaming when I do that. It's the bearded lady, I'm confused. So we do all these things. We meditate for the purpose of allowing the mind to become peaceful, for unwinding, for relaxing, for maybe actually, and this wasn't mentioned, enjoying our life. Not Theravada. So if we actually meditate, we understand the nature of our mind a bit better, and when you understand something, you don't fear it. The dark, UFOs, immigrants, we fear these things because we don't understand them. It's the basis of our fear, is not understanding. So when you understand the mind, you have also less fear. What will tomorrow bring? It's okay. I'm not worried about tomorrow because I understand the nature of change. It's got to change. This is the nature of it. So you don't get all wound up about it. Sometimes we try to undo things, but it's best not to do them in the first place. That's true wisdom, is not doing something which you have to undo later on. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not trying to super glue the 13-inch wheel onto a 14-inch hub or whatever. Something like that, yes. So, wisdom tells us not to get involved in the first place. So meditation is like telling the mind, don't worry, you don't have to get involved with everything. These thoughts that come up during your meditation, you don't have to get involved with them. Just pretend it's another repeat of Neighbours from 6 years ago on TV. How involved would you be with another rerun? It's the fifth time I've seen it, and you don't like Neighbours. How much attention would you pay to it? Actually, is Neighbours still running?
Don't know.
Oh, right response. A triple A plus. Okay, you can get a home loan with that kind of triple A rating. So yeah, okay, we don't know. So if you're not so interested, then apply the same thinking when you're meditating as well. When you're looking at the mind, you're trying to follow the breath or whatever the object of the meditation is, the object meaning the thing that you're paying attention to. So sometimes it's the breath, sometimes it's feelings of loving kindness or what I would rather say friendship. When you're focusing on those kinds of things, then you don't give so much attention to the reruns of Neighbours. Because if you're not so interested in Neighbours, then you let it go. You let it drop, the thought of what your husband was doing, the thought of what your girlfriend was doing, the thought of what the dog was doing this morning. You drop them, because it's a rerun of Neighbours. Not so interesting. Pretty boring stuff, actually. But we tend to make it interesting, and this is where we have difficulty with our meditation. We start to fuel that fire, that thought. We invest time in it, you see. When you invest time in things, you make it bigger. So rather than making those thoughts bigger by fueling it, we go the other way. Oh yeah, it's just another thought. It's another rerun. It's another psychological tape I keep playing over and over in my life. I know how that tape plays. I know the beginning, I know the middle, and I know the end of it. I know how it works. So I'm not going to feed into that anymore. I won't give it any more fuel. I'll drop it. I'll go back to the breath, or I'll go back to the feelings of metta, as an example. So tonight, I don't plan on teaching you a breath meditation, because I would gather most of you have learnt breath meditation or metta meditation. And I would say 99.9% of the time, that's all you're going to learn. Would I be correct? Hands up those of you who've only learnt breath meditation or loving kindness meditation.
What do you scan?
No, we do a lot.
You do a lot. Mm-hmm. Great.
Gratitude. Mm-hmm. Walking.
Walking.
Yeah.
Is that when you don't like what you're hearing? Excellent. Well, I'm very happy to see that you've actually got a wider exposure than what would normally be the case in most monasteries and/or meditation centres, etc. So. How many have done recollection of peace? No hands. Look at that. So I thought you had variety here. That's a zero. What's the odds?
We can always learn something new.
Can you?
Yes, we can. We're good.
See, stubborn? See how stubborn? Stubbornness can be good at times, just not when you're arguing with people. Okay, so we can do a recollection of peace meditation. And the purpose of this is to feel peaceful. Ooh, what's that feeling like, some of you say? That's the feeling where you don't get involved with this and that, but rather you start to invest more in the peace which is present. It's there right now. You can't recognize it. It's the only problem. It's buried, you see. This peace is buried under stuff, layers and layers of stuff. So we're going to try and unpick those layers so you can tap into that gold of peace. This is very good for people who have high blood pressure. Very good for people who have heart issues. Very good for people who have problems with their temper, as in short-tempered, short fuse, big explosions, these kinds of things. So what we'll do is the recollection of peace meditation tonight. Are there any questions so far about meditation? Very good. Right, so we'll make a start. It's okay if we go for a little bit longer than half an hour, yes? Mm-hmm. Yes?
No.
Depends how many people have only been once before.
Yes, if you've only been once before, 30 minutes.
Before is agony.
Oh, my God. Yes. Hopefully it's not that bad. Okay. So, Having all been very good meditators and being very mindful, you know that you need to turn off your mobile phone first. If you think you've turned it off, do it again. Because no matter how many times I say this, you'd be surprised how many people still have their phones on, all with the best of intention, rushing out the door, running into here, getting the car parked, da-da-da-da-da. They leave their phone on jackhammer, you know. Like this, that's what you hear in the meditation. It's like,
angry.
Huh?
You get angry.
Sometimes I laugh.
Just a way of letting
it. Sometimes I'm just frustrated because, you know, how many times do you need to hear an instruction? Guarantee you, if I said the building's on fire, please leave. Nah, I'll just stay. It wouldn't happen. So, what's on the line? So, tonight, peace is on the line. So, if you turn off your phones, turn off the vibrate mode or everything, just turn it off. Unless you're a doctor on call, what are you going to go to? Food? Family? You'll get that tomorrow. And when you get home, plenty of time for that. There you go.
Can I throw a question?
Throw a question. I'll see if I can catch it.
This is one of those 3 o'clock in the morning. Right. Okay. I wake up in the middle of the night. I wake up and it's still dark. I look at the clock. I know what time it's going to be. 3 o'clock.
Mm.
It's always 3 o'clock.
Right.
And it's always the same old fanfare of rubbish going on in my head. Why is this so? And I think, all I've got to do now is meditate. I'll meditate and I go to sleep. No. Same old song. Same old crap. Earworm. Who's he got?
Was it Kylie Minogue? Or?
No, she's got heavy rock.
She's got that song, I Can't Get You Out of My Head. Yeah.
It's a lot of Moody Blues, though. It's the best. Listening to that, but that's from the 60s.
No, I know that band. I've heard of that band name before. Yes. Okay.
They reckon most people die at 3 o'clock.
Between 3 and 4, typically, at aged care facilities. Yeah, that's because your circadian rhythm goes out.
You're giving up by that stage.
Well, I think you give up before 3 o'clock in the morning, yes. What you're thinking during the day is what we are at night time, you see. Somebody asked me that question, why do I have all these thoughts coming up in my meditation at night time? And I said, well, what did you do during the day? A lot of thinking, getting involved with stuff.
Eight lots of children.
Sorry?
Eight lots of children.
That sounds pretty busy.
Yeah,
are they yours?
No.
Okay, well, that sounds illegal. I'm sure you're a professional. This is being recorded on a Tuesday night. A slightly bald-headed man.
To be put on the web.
Called Department of Family Services. Oh, good Lord. Oh, well, we're in the right place. So these things happen because we give fuel to things during the day for the last week, the last couple of months, etc. And then, of course, when we're trying to be peaceful or calm, and sleeping is usually one of those times that we're trying to be peaceful or calm in a certain way, then these things can boil up again. But also, you've probably had more than enough sleep, and the bad news is when you're getting older, you actually need less sleep. Yeah, awful, isn't it? Oh, great. I've got more energy and a body that can't do much about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's dark and it's cold and it's raining.
It's dark and it's cold and it's raining, so what do you do? Try to fall back to sleep, right? And what does that? What's the nature of the mind that says, you want to go back to sleep? Frustration, somebody said. No, it's usually laziness. Shock horror. I'm not saying you're lazy. I'm saying it's the quality of mind that tells you to go back to sleep is laziness. It's like, oh, what am I going to do if I'm awake? Meditate? Oh, good Lord. Anything but that. I might work myself out if I do that. I might find out what's going on. Which was what we'll do tonight anyway. Does that answer your question or does it take you on a merry-go-round? That'll do. That's a really great way of not answering my question. Okay, make sure you do it in the corner under observation. Okay. All right. So, lights, please. It's like magic. So, for those of you sitting on chairs, it's good for your posture if your thigh is parallel to the ground. So that if your hip is my elbow and your knee is my fist, that it's not like at an angle like that, nor is it the other way like this.
If it's this way, your knees are higher than your hip, that means you're sitting in a baby chair. Get a bigger chair. If you're sitting the other way, where your knees are lower than your hips, it means you're sitting in an adult chair. Get a baby chair. Or put some cushions underneath your feet so that they come parallel. All right? This just helps with your circulation through your legs. Also, if you're sitting on chairs, sometimes good to put a cushion in the small of your back so that your back is mostly straight. No, you don't have to look like you're posing for school photos. Right? It's not that serious. You want to be relaxed, but you don't want to be slouching as if you're watching TV and ready to fall asleep. The way that your body is predisposed does have an effect on the mind, all right? It does affect the mind. So give it some seriousness, but not so serious. The middle way here. If you wear glasses, I also encourage you to take your glasses off for a few reasons. A, I can poke faces at you and you won't see what I'm doing. B, and more importantly, you don't wear glasses when you go to bed normally. So you're not here to study anything apart from your mind. So you don't need glasses. Again, psychosomatic, the things that we do with our body actually has an effect on the mind. Taking the glasses off is something you do just before you go to bed. This helps you to relax. And there won't be much going on anyway, activity-wise. If, however, you feel paranoid or afraid of not having your glasses on, as if somebody's going to step on them or break them, please wear them. I'm not here to control you, just to make fun of you. Okay, so yes, for this meditation, your eyes will be closed as well, so your glasses will have very little benefit. All right. Now, for those of you who are sitting on the floor, same story with the knees. Your knees should be lower than your hips. It is good to have a cushion underneath your backside to lift your hips up. This means that you don't have to put so much effort into your posture in terms of your back being straight. It'll feel naturally more straight without having to go against gravity, so to speak, and slouch or push forward, which you'll get tired of very quickly. So I encourage cushions. If, however, sitting on the ground or sitting on a chair is not comfortable for you and you wish to recline on the floor, that's also fine. Just don't try to fall asleep, which is naturally what happens when we lie down. If you're going to lie down, choose a side of the body that you usually don't go to sleep on. If you sleep on your right-hand side when you go to bed, try to lie on your left-hand side. All right? So go against the nature of where you want to go to sleep, because you'll likely go to sleep. Okay. So please, close your eyes. Relax the body. Relax. Find parts of the body where there's any tension. And where there is that tension, just kind of relax those muscles there. If you need to stretch out those muscles a little bit. If your shoulder muscles are a bit tight, then you can lean your head from side to side slowly. Lean it to the left and hold it for a couple of seconds. And you drop the opposite shoulder. And you feel stretch in the shoulder that way. If your feet are kind of tense, or your legs, you can wriggle your toes a bit, or hold your toes up towards your knees and hold that for a while. That gives your calf muscle a little bit of a workout. Stretch it out a bit. Just looking through your body for anything which seems to be a bit tense, and allowing the muscles there to relax. The first 5 to 10 minutes of your meditation is a great time to adjust your posture. Don't be afraid of adjusting in the beginning. You shouldn't be afraid at all, really. But allow the body to become a bit more comfortable. It will not be 100% comfortable, because it's the body. We just do our best that we can to make sure that it's comfortable enough for the purpose of sitting. And we bring our attention to our toes. Looking through from the toes through the arches of the feet, we kind of relax the muscles through this area here. And moving up through to the ankles and the calf muscles. We look at any tension that we might find there in the body. Just allowing those muscles to relax. And checking up now around the knee area and the upper thighs, looking for any tension there, just allowing the muscles there to relax. Checking the muscles through the backside. See if there's any tension there, allowing it to relax. Checking around the lower back area, see if there's any tension there. Checking around the abdomen, around the stomach, see if there's any tension around there. Again, just thinking for the muscles in that area just to relax. Checking in between the shoulder blades, if there's any tension there in your back. You can kind of push your shoulders forward if you wish to kind of get a bit of stretch there. And scan for the chest area, if there's any stress or strain there, allowing the muscles to relax. You can pull your shoulders backwards this time if you want to stretch the muscles at the front. Now checking through the hands up to the elbows, if there's any gripping in the hands, allowing the muscles there to relax. And the same goes for the muscles in the forearm. Check in the upper arms, if there's any tension there. Again, relaxing those areas. Checking the muscles around the neck. Shoulders. If you feel there's a tension in the neck, sometimes you can hold your head down so that your chin touches your chest. Stretch the back, hold it for a couple of seconds, always doing these things gently. And coming back to the neutral posture. And then you can go the other way, holding your head up. And once you've gone as far as you can holding your head up, you can open your jaw and get a little bit more stretch. And come back to the neutral posture for your head. Checking your jaw to see if there's any clenching of teeth. Allowing your jaw to relax. Looking now at the muscles that are just behind the ears, connecting down to the neck. See if there's any tension in that area. Allowing the muscles to relax there. Checking the area of the forehead in between the eyebrows. Is there any scrunching going on as if you're concentrating hard on something? If that's the case, let it go. Be relaxed. Now bringing your awareness to the sounds that you can hear around you. Whatever sounds that it might be, sounds like the air conditioner, people breathing, people moving. Sounds of traffic outside. Sounds of my voice. Whatever sounds you can hear, just knowing they're arising and they're passing away. It doesn't matter what the sound is. You don't try to follow the sound and work out what it means or represents. It's too complicated. Just to know that there's a sound now, and now it's gone. Now there's another sound, and that one's gone. You might listen to one sound for quite a while, but you may not. It doesn't matter. The sounds are not irritating to you, because that's actually what you're listening out for. It's what you're paying attention to. Whichever sound comes to your awareness. This is the object. This is the thing that you're paying attention to. So taking the time now to pay attention to sounds. Start thinking about this and that. It's just another run of neighbors. Just paying attention to the sounds.
And now I would like for you to bring to your mind a time in your life where you have felt very peaceful. Perhaps you were going for a walk in a park. Maybe you're just sitting on the back veranda of your house. Perhaps you were in the forest, doing a mountain hike. Maybe you're sitting at the beach, not doing anything much. Sitting on a park bench. Wherever it is that in the past you've seen yourself, feel that peace. Bring to mind that place. See it very clearly in your mind. Get in touch with that feeling that you had at that time. That feeling of peace or solitude or quietness, being relaxed, at ease with all things. Now, with every breath that comes in, you can feel that quality of peace expanding in the middle of the heart, your physical heart. With every breath that comes in, that feeling of peace grows just a little bit bigger. And as it's growing, it fills every cell of the heart, starting from the center. With every breath that comes in, that feeling of peace increasing. There's a sense of lightness, coolness, just like a gentle breeze across the face on a warm day. So too, when you're breathing in, it feels like your heart is filling with peace, coolness, lightness. Every breath that comes in, feeling the peace expand throughout the whole heart, filling it completely. Now, with every breath that's coming in, you can feel that peace expanding beyond the heart, moving into the lungs, radiating out throughout the chest. And wherever that feeling of peace touches, it fills it completely. No strain and no struggle, no stress, just lightness, a sense of ease. Every breath that's coming in now, that feeling radiating throughout your whole torso, moving through the stomach, any knots which might be there coming undone, just a feeling of relaxation and peace there. Every breath that's coming in now, you can feel that peace filling through the shoulders and down towards the fingertips, every cell of the body in that area being filled with that feeling of peace. Every breath that's coming in now, you can feel that peace moving down through the hips, through the backside, filling every part as it's going along, a sense of lightness and ease. With every breath that's coming in, it's slowly moving through.
feeling that peace now moving through the legs, from the top of the legs right down to the tips of the toes, leaving no part untouched by that sensation of peace. Completely relaxed, at ease. Now, with every breath coming in, you can feel the whole body at ease, at peace. No care in the world, nothing to do, nobody to be. Bliss in itself. Feeling comfortable with the body as it is. So now we come towards the end of the meditation, we give rise to contemplation. Was I able to relax the body in the beginning? Did I find any areas of tension? If so, why? Was I able to pay attention to the sounds around me? Was I wrestling with thoughts coming and going? What kind of thoughts? Do I think these kinds of things regularly? If so, why? Could I remember a time of peace in my life? Or did I struggle to find a time where I felt at peace and at ease? Could I spread that feeling of peace through the body? Was it easy? Was it difficult? At what point was it so? Looking into the nature of cause and effect so that it can benefit yourself in the future when you practice again. So now, having come to the end of the contemplation, you can open your eyes and you can come out of the recollection of peace just in time for the voice from God. Not my voice. So now you're all thoroughly relaxed. You don't feel like saying anything. So if you wear glasses, you feel like putting them back on, you're most welcome to do so. So how many of you feel like drifting off to sleep now?
No.
Doesn't matter if you feel like drifting off, it's okay as well. For some people, the ability to sleep is a difficult thing.
There it is.
There's God. So some of us find it very difficult to get to sleep. Even just that act by itself is a lot of suffering for some people. I met this guy a couple of weeks ago, and he was insomniac since he was like 12 or something, very young. So if he's lucky, if he can get 2 or 3 hours a night. Yeah. So he's like watching an episode of The Walking Dead or something.
It's a current sleep.
Is it The Walking Dead or The Living Dead? I see these things in newspapers. So, well, any zombie apocalypse movie, there you go. So sometimes it feels like that. You're wandering through life and you just don't know if it's real or not. What parts of your life are real, which parts are not real. When you don't get enough sleep, you're subject to a lot of hallucinations. And strangely enough, it's a bit of an analogy for a lot of people's lives. When we kind of like just sleep through most of it, you know. Yeah. I just remember going to primary school. Oh, now I'm in a nursing home. What happened between that playing on the slippery slide and now lying flat in the bed? So sometimes that little gap, it bridges very quickly. We kind of skip through it fairly quickly. That's because we're not aware, we're not awake, right? So the question kind of put before was, you know, why do these thoughts kind of affect me at 3 o'clock in the morning? Well, are we awake or not? Are we still asleep or not? Sometimes it's a bit like that.
Can I just add another point?
No, you asked the question, I said no.
I've had my turn.
No, see, even if I say no, they still want to keep going. Go on, don't be defensive, crossing around like this.
Sometimes in the morning, you can think back to the detail of stuff that you talk about. If you practice it at primary school, kids' names, neighbours' names, families, and then you can... it's like in exact detail and the people you can see them.
So
that's quite good. I quite enjoy that. But I don't like that 3 o'clock stuff. Although actually, yes, you can use that to, if you can turn that creative. If you want to like resolve issues or technical details and things, you can get a lot of things happening at that 3 o'clock time.
Yeah.
Provided you can stop the bad shit coming up as well. You know.
The bad stuff.
Yeah. You don't want the bad stuff. Keep the bad stuff out.
But the bad stuff is only bad if we make it so.
It's coming from a bad place. Well, let's leave it in there. You know?
Yeah. It's not so much what comes in, it's what comes out. Right? I can listen to a whole tirade of swearing, but as long as it doesn't come out of these lips that way.
It's better to come out and bottle it up, though.
Well, you don't want to bottle it up. But that's the thing. It can come in and you can filter it. And not keep hold of the filter when it's full. Chuck it. And, you know, Ajahn Chah is a famous forest monastic practitioner in Thailand. And he said, being a monk is like being a garbage can for people. People just want to dump all their crap in there. But he said, the secret is to cut the bottom out. Be Mr. or Mrs. Teflon, you see. The shit comes, but it just doesn't stick. Slides off. This is how we need to be. Like non-stick frying pans. If you let things stick, then of course, what happens if you let something stick in a frying pan? Assuming the heat is still on.
It burns.
It burns. What happens to the mind when something sticks to it? It burns. That's what anger feels like, doesn't it? It burns. Why? You've allowed something to stick. Well, you're an idiot. I wasn't looking at anybody in particular when I said that. You're an idiot. That's because you've allowed that comment to stick. It sticks right here, right in that place that I was trying to get you to develop peace in the heart. It sticks right there. Because you allow it to stick, of course, with the presence of that burning, that heat. It burns. It burns and burns and burns and keeps going. Because we give it fuel. We actually think it's true. What do you think? If I said unicorns are stupid, I've never met an intelligent unicorn yet. How many of you would be upset? Oh, I own unicorns, and they're nothing like that. Would you say that?
No.
No. Why?
There's no such thing.
There's no such thing, right? You laugh about it. This guy's an idiot. It's like, how many unicorns have you interviewed in your life, Venerable Sir? Are you crazy? But when people say the same thing about us, oh, that's different. That me that doesn't exist, that I that doesn't exist, oh, we get so upset about that. Your I is stupid. Immediately, the non-stick surface has disappeared. Here comes just a plain old iron pot. No oil, raw ingredients, straight onto it, lots of flame. And then there's smoke. Crazy. How does that happen? Char-grilled anyone? But that's what happens to your heart. It gets char-grilled. Nobody wants any of that after that, do they? How many of you cooked something in a non-stick pan, left it there for a couple of hours on the plate? On the hot plate, that is. Oh, I thought it was tomatoes. Look at that. They look like pieces of charcoal. Does anybody want to eat that? Does anybody want to touch that? Does anybody want to take it away with them back home? But this is what we're like when we allow anger to reside, when we allow comments that we think is real about us, which is an unreal thing in itself. We take it so personally. So the next time somebody says something about you, just go, oh, they're talking about unicorns again. Then you just smile. Okay? You just smile. Oh, yes, yes, unicorns. All right. Yes. It doesn't stick. It slides right off. Don't allow it to roost. If you've got a rooster, it wants to roost somewhere. It wants to sit somewhere. Right? So if you allow it to roost, if you allow it not, you know, to have to fly away, you don't give it a ledge. You give it a ledge like pigeons. If you put a statue out in the yard with nothing on top of the statue to stop anything from landing on it like pigeons, what happens to the statue?
Yeah.
It's all pooed on.
It gets all pooed on, right.
What's wrong with that?
What's wrong
pigeons
with
are cool, man.
Pigeons? Some would say the rats of the sky. I say some would say, I'm not saying anything. It's good to be able to find beauty in all things, even dog shit. Yeah. You look at that and you go, well, it looks like chocolate, Mr. Whippy. Some of you know what Mr. Whippy is. It's like that soft serve ice cream. But don't eat it. I'm not encouraging you to eat it. But you need to be able to find the beauty in those things. Also, you need to be able to find the ugliness in beauty. You know, people putting excessive amounts of makeup on. And again, I'm not looking at anybody in particular when I say this. What are you trying to cover? What are you trying to hide? Men with your aftershave. Women with your foundation so thick you can rebuild a 9/11 site. Is that you, Mum? Oh, I don't know. The foundation's so thick. It could be a robot. I don't want to smile. It'll crack. We don't know what we're dealing with anymore. Right? We cover ourselves with so many things. Makeup, jewelry, clothes, jobs, relationships, layer upon layer of thing. Eventually we might even see ourselves, but not with too many layers. It's hard to see clearly what's happening underneath with too many layers. We're usually trying to be something to someone. And usually we're trying to be something to everybody else apart from ourselves. Crazy. We're trying to raise unicorns. And leprechauns, mythical things that don't exist, layer after layer. So we can get so distracted eventually we don't think about it. So when we wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, We don't give any attention to it anymore. So, this is not what the Buddha teaches. The Buddha teaches us to understand, to look into, to see clearly. It's not a religion. It's not about belief. Some of you may have belief in something. I'm not interested in belief. I believe you will be a billionaire by the age of 58. Well, that's an interesting belief. Is it likely to be true? I'm more into cause and effect. You throw something up and on this planet, it's likely to come down. It's called gravity. You throw something up, it comes back down. The nature karma is like that. Karma is cause and effect. Not belief. No room for belief in the Buddha's teaching. At the beginning, you might have a reflective acceptance of a view. You think about something you find in the teaching. Is this true? Is it true to my own experience? But your experience might be limited. The only problem with logic is like that as well. You can say, I am very logical. Great. Are you the 10-meter wide telescope dish built by NASA or the $400 one built in China, which is only half a centimeter wide? What kind of telescope do you have? Because if you've got a bad telescope, then your logic is equally bad. Right? In other words, the limitations of logic is the strength and clarity of the mind. So logic only goes so far. Reasoning only goes so far. Meditation takes us beyond logic and reason. The extent or the limits of logic and reason. Meditation takes us beyond that. Which is why science won't catch up with it. Science is caught up with what can be measured, with instruments. And the Buddha says that the mind is immeasurable, especially when it's well developed. It's immeasurable. You'll find also the use of psychic powers, flying through the air without machines. How is that possible? Well, you can't say it's not possible, because you haven't developed your mind yet. The world was flat, after all, 200 years ago. And for how long was it flat? Until we developed tools with which to measure things and then understand clearly. So whilst you might laugh at the idea of psychic powers, I will ask, how sharp is your mind? Are you dealing with the sharpest tool in the shed? Are you the sort of person who turns up to, trivia nights and win all the time? Are you the sort of person who understands emotional intelligence? You might win trivia, but you have no idea what your wife is thinking. So much for your intelligence. The dogs are running away and you're staying at home. Then you're surprised why the tsunami wipes you out. But I won trivia night. But you're not paying any attention to the nature around you. You're disconnected. There's many different types of intelligence and wisdom. But the Buddha asks us not to be aware of which is the longest river in the world and what's the average rainfall in the Amazon basin. He's asking you to try and understand your own mind. And that's the hardest job in the world to do. Understand yours, not somebody else's, your mind. Because then when you know how to treat your mind, you know how to treat another mind. We all like to be looked after, therefore we should look after others. That's if, and that's an assumption, if we know how to look after ourselves. Sometimes what we take to be looking after ourselves is actually hurting ourselves. What we take sometimes to be hurting ourselves is actually taking care of ourselves. The only way to understand the difference between those two things, that proposition, is wisdom. This is one of the things which will be developed as you go along. Logic is good, yes, but it's not enough. Reasoning is not enough. You have to go beyond that as well. I'm not saying discard it. Logic has its place. Mathematics is pretty good. You work out how much salary you're getting, for example. Are you getting paid enough or not getting paid? These kinds of things, they have their place, but it's limited. We need to go beyond the limited minds that we have. Like, what I do in the world has no impact on anybody else. It's my business. It's my business. So then I'll just chuck rubbish all over the ground. It's just my business. It's my house. It's my property. Interesting concepts. How do you own property? How do you own earth? Next, we'll sell air. Actually, some of you might be old enough to know a movie called Spaceballs. It's a comedy. It's a bit silly. Maybe the geekier ones amongst you. Okay. But in this movie called Spaceballs, it's a 1980-something movie, I think. They're actually selling tins of air to another world that has poor air quality. Do you know what's happening in China right now? Is it Korea? They're selling tins of air from other places. What was comedy in the 80s is now a reality. How much would you pay for a tin of air? $3. This is outrageous. This is from Switzerland. I'll pay $5. But the idea that what we do here doesn't affect other people or other beings, we have to revise that. We can laugh in Australia. I'm glad the Chinese have got all those poisonous technologies and industries in their country. At least it's not here. But the clouds of toxic fumes come over. It's spraying America on the Californian coast, right? Because trade winds carry it across. It carries it across down to us as well. Indonesian fires affect the Singaporeans and the Malaysians. The world is a small place now. We have a large population. We don't have many places to hide. You can't hide anymore now. If you own a phone, we all know where you are. Yes. There was a debate about the Australia card, the ID card. We can't have that, they say. Where's my civil liberties? And the government didn't worry about it too much. I used to work in a bank at one stage in my life, obviously not as a monk. But I say, I don't need your Australia card. Just give us a second. Every Tuesday on the 23rd, you go to a BP service station. You spend about $28, roughly about the amount a carton of cigarettes costs. Is it true that you purchase cigarettes on the 28th, a Tuesday, at the BP on the corner of such and such? I don't need your Australia card. I've got one. It's called your bank account. I've got your social security detail. I don't need an Australian card. It's already there. All right? Your credit card tells me everything about you, where you shop, who you hang out with. All of this kind of stuff can be found in your bank statements. Right? No, I wasn't selling it to anybody else. No, I was not selling any of this information personally identifiable to anybody. Cover myself.
Sorry.
Yeah, will you? No, you might just leave me there and see how much Teflon do you have, Bunte? I might just sit there, solitary confinement. What's the catch?
Just think of all the meditation you can do.
3 meals a day, of which I can only have 2. Breakfast and lunch, can't eat after midday until breakfast the next day.
And meditation.
Soft walls. Yeah. You know, if I feel like going crazy, I can just charge a wall, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Won't hurt most of the toilets wherever I want. And somebody else will clean it up. Hello. That's what I said. What's the catch? What do I have to do to get in here? You have to punch your prison guard. How many times? I want to go up in the world. It's the Hilton for a monk. Probably send you crazy, but for a monk it should be the Hilton. A lot of monks will go crazy though, I would admit. Alright, so you might have some questions anyway. Fire away if you've got some questions.
What made you become a monk?
What made me become a monk? I was busy. I did all sorts of things. Somebody asked me the question tonight, what did you do before being a monk? And I said, I haven't been an astronaut. Okay. It's easier for me to tell you what I haven't done. Right. What I have done, because we don't have.
When do you write a book?
I don't. Okay. No.
It'd be awesome.
There's enough books. There's a lot of reading. But do we read here? That's the hard one to read. Bestseller's easy to read, but this is the bestseller right here. Not the New York Times, it's right here. But the font is like font 4. Right, so tiny, the details. But you've got to keep the magnifying glass on it, right? Keep checking it out. What's going on here? I think there was an Indian, Native American Indian saying, you white men, I'm going into stereotypical non-Indian voice, you white men, very good, understanding out here, but not understanding here. It's true. We go to the bottom of the ocean. Oh, look, there's blind crabs. Alpha Centauri's 4.6... light years away. What did I have for breakfast? No idea. Who did I irritate just then? No idea. Right. Always aware of out there, but not aware of what's happening in here. So So I could write a book and then somebody will read it and then it'll be, you know, recycled or something. They'll say, monk who? Every one of us is like that, like Olympic athletes, you know. We're hot for 2 weeks and then after that it's like, who? You saying what? It's a bolt, isn't that thing you put in the door? We're all like that. We've got a use-by date. As soon as we're born, we've got a stamped use-by date. What are you going to do before the produce goes off? That's the question. I'm going to write a book, but so what? I really need to understand here. That's my job as a monk, is to understand this. So why did I become a monk? To understand this.
I was just going to say, what drew you into Buddhism?
I wasn't looking for Buddhism. I actually don't like Buddhism, and I don't consider myself a Buddhist.
Yeah, I should have rephrased that.
That's okay.
I remember you saying that last week.
Well, you're you like punishment, don't you? Glutton. But I read about it in a 5-page summary of Buddhism at university when I was 26. So I went to university quite late. I was too busy doing stuff when I was a bit younger, and I didn't know what I wanted to do anyway. You move from institution to institution. Do the primary, kindergarten, primary school, then you do the high school, then you go on to uni. Don't think. You don't want to stop and think for a second. What am I doing at uni? Probably something you don't enjoy. Why? Because daddy told you to do it. That's a great reason. Live my life through the eyes of others. But how many of us do that day in and day out? You can't say that. Do you know everyone? No, it's a dangerous thing to say. We are all hepatitis infected. I'm not. Well, a lot of us do, though. A lot of us live as if asleep. A lot of us do. But I wasn't looking for religion. I was raised Catholic, which makes me prime material for becoming a Buddhist. And as soon as I could think for myself, about the age of 12 to 13, I started to find problems with that religious faith. I can't believe in a God that loves me and creates the devil at the same time. It's a logical issue, and there are limitations to logic, but I just don't think good people do bad stuff, because you can't call them good if they're doing bad things. I love you, son. I have to shoot you. Dad, I think you're a bit mixed up. I don't think you're the good guy everybody thinks you are, right? So I had problems with that at that stage. I just thought it's Swiss cheese logic in the Bible, so it's full of holes. To the side, and I didn't want to go to anything religious after that. And I was a real Catholic, not these part-time Catholics, you know, the ones that turn up for Christmas and Easter. Yeah, it's not a real Catholic. I read the Bible, which isn't usually Catholics don't do. So anyway, I read the Bible. I was an altar boy as well. I went to Mass at 6 o'clock in the morning, not this wimpy 10 a.m. on Sunday, right? I was hardcore. If you're going to do it properly. It's a bit of a motto that I have. Don't be half a monk, be a real monk. Right? Don't be half a Catholic, be a full-on Catholic. If you believe it, if this is something you truly believe, get behind it. Understand it. But I did, and the more I read, the more questions I've asked of priests and bishops, and the more they went, oh, I think it's tea time. Does God know everything? Oh, yes, he does. So why does he allow tsunamis to kill thousands and millions of people? He knows that's coming, right? Oh, yes, he knows. He knows everything. So he's a willing bystander to atrocity? I think it's tea time. Would you like a cup of tea? I'll get one of the nuns to come in. Maybe they can talk to you or something like that. Run away! Right.
So what made you... It's not your monastery, a monastery.
Yeah.
What made you set that up?
We don't have enough place for chicks to ordain.
Ask a silly question.
It's not silly. It's dead on.
No.
Dead on. Yeah. We don't have any we don't have enough places for women to ordain. It's that simple. There's a long waiting list and there's nowhere. You go over to Asia, forget it. It's so difficult. So, and you got visa problems when you go to Asia. And because women represent more than 50% of the population, statistically, you might think it's 50-50. It isn't. Males are not that important. Sorry, guys. It's just, you know, only needs one of you to impregnate 20 of them. Not the other way around. We're not going to get 20 kids out of one guy, right? We are not that important in the grand scheme of evolution. We are not that important. Okay? Walking IVF, right? That's about it. So the thing is, we actually need those spaces for women so they can ordain and leave their husbands.
What was the question?
Sorry, I couldn't see. It's too peripheral. Yep.
Sorry, I have two questions.
That's a bit greedy.
I can do here half an hour easy to sit on meditation, but the same thing I can't do at home more than 10 or 15. I'm pushing myself now.
Mm.
I don't know why. I'm the same person, same thing.
I know.
Concentrating the breathing.
But here you've got an audience watching you. Whoa. Performance anxiety. I can't shift. If I shift, I'm not the queen of the cushion. She's still sitting. I'll outsit her 5 minutes. As soon as she gets up, I'm gone.
No, I'm very honest with myself, so I'm not looking anywhere.
Okay. But sometimes it's actually about having other people around you. It can be quite encouraging. Yeah. So then later on, you can sit for 2 hours, 3 hours at a go, and you're not worried about other people because you won't be aware of them at that stage, usually. Yeah, so you can sit for much longer. But at the beginning, it's good to have the encouragement of like-minded people around you. So groups like this, fantastic to give you also a sense of discipline. Like when I first started out as a layperson, I'd be sitting 1.5 hours, half an hour walking meditation, 1.5 hours of sit, and then another half an hour walking meditation. And this was my whole day, 8 to 14 hours of sitting every day. But at the end, or towards the end of that, you actually start to develop a mind of kindness and compassion towards yourself. Not so hard at the beginning, go hard or go home, not like that. At the beginning it can be like that, but you actually relax into it a bit more. You have more compassion towards yourself. Okay, the knees hurt, I'll just go for a bit of a walk, it's alright. And you're developing the discipline to allow the mind to go, you know what, although these things are coming up for me, it's okay. I can be at ease and at peace with these things too. It's fine. And when the more less war that you make with yourself, It's easier.
Oh, great. The second one I feel like, see, you, when somebody said, I'm a stupid, you were saying an example.
Mm.
At the same time, you said, while I process myself, if somebody says I'm stupid, that I am mine, that's what I process myself. Oh, did they say to me, well, how can they did it, all these things come?
Yep.
So you were saying in your talk, I and my is not exist.
Mm.
But
well, what is you?
Yeah, that's what that's
yes.
My big question is. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm asking you. What do you think is you?
That's me, you know?
No, that's not answering the question. That's just using a simile, which doesn't actually answer the question. What is you?
A human being, or like
is that a label, or is that something that you can actually demonstrate to me? Can you demonstrate the quality of your I to me? And how would you do so?
That's too complicated.
No, it's actually too easy. But we make it complicated.
Oh.
How can you show me? Show me your you.
That's me.
No. Well, so you're saying your body is you.
Oh, yeah.
So your body is you. You're nothing but a piece of flesh.
Mm.
Really?
No.
Because there's another piece of flesh next to you. And I'm sure that the answer... and I'm sure the answers to that question will be different. And the unique identifier is not the flesh. You both have red blood cells, I'm assuming.
Mm.
We can test at the hospital, it's right next door. Right? So it's not that. What you take to be you is not just your body, is it?
No.
What else
no.
is it then?
Brain.
That's mind. Flesh, isn't it?
Your spirit.
Spirit. Where's that?
Your soul.
Show me an example of your soul and your spirit, please.
It's your mind.
I'm keen to know what that looks like, or sounds like, or feels like. Your mind. And what is that?
Thinking.
Let me make it a bit easier for you, because some of you look very uncomfortable squirming in your seats. Steam is coming. Okay, but I will say, I don't think you can explain who you think you are outside of feeling, perception, intention, and consciousness.
Mm.
And even then, show me the solid part of that. Show me the real part, which is that real perception that makes you you. Or is it just a stream of perceptions that come and go, come and go?
Mm.
Is it just a stream of thoughts which come and go? But is that you?
No.
Do you think you're unique in feeling hungry? Do you think you're unique in feeling the sensation of cold?
Mm.
Is it just a perception of cold?
Yes.
And do others share that perception?
Yes.
Then you have no you. It's not unique.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, guys.